The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at cooperadio.org.
Well, on today's show, we are having on again Delana Gayle Bowen. She's a renowned jazz and blues singer in the Downtown East Side. She's also the director of the Downtown East Side Center for the Arts and is a longtime organizer with Women's Memorial March Committee and Indigenous women's organizations in the neighborhood. She turned 75 this year and describes herself as an Afro-Canadian Cherokee force of nature, a member of the Blues Hall of Fame. In her decades in the music industry, she's opened for the Guess Who, the Monkees, Thin Lizzy, Chilliwack, and with her former band, the Thunderbird Blues Band, opened for B.B. King, Freddie Hubbard, and other blues greats. Before we interview, let's hear her new track, It's a Lullaby for Missing Women.
You knew her when she was a baby in your arms. You knew her as a young girl with her innocent charm. And now she's gone. Into the land of the spirit world, a father's pride, a mother's love. Yes, your daughter was a gift from above.
Delana, thank you so much for coming back on The Pulse. It's always wonderful to have you here.
You're welcome, dear. Thank you for having me.
The last time I actually ran into you was at the Missing Women's March, Women's Memorial March on February 14th. We've been a month since then. That's such an example to me every year of the other side of the narrative, of people coming together, of selfless behavior, of community. I mean, it was a particularly touching one because we saw the passing of the torch of the elder role. I mean, it's been a month, but I know, you know, that's such an important event every year for countering these kind of selfish narratives we see.
It is. And, you know, I was just talking about this the other day, I don't know if I should call it a tragedy, but the unfortunate part about this is, you know, I was part of the original committee that created the march. And we fought for years and years to get the missing and murdered women's issue into the House of Commons and before the members of Parliament. So we finally did that. They did the missing and murdered women's inquiry. They made, I think it was 102 recommendations. But they haven't acted on it. So to me, it is still a major issue. And in fact, there was a young girl murdered just outside of Tinseltown. Nobody knows anything. Nobody's seen anything. So the thing about human rights and human issues is that we need to change our our relationship with that. It's not another person's problem. It's all of our problems. It's a community problem. It's a social problem. It's mostly with women who live in poverty. And so the repercussions of this social platform where the people who live in poverty are not supported in various ways, whether it's proper housing, whether it's medical attention, whether it's the social climate in which they live, whether it's a healing process to encourage them to walk in a good way and live a healthy, productive life, is all taken away because of poverty. And so as long as this remains an us and them in terms of the ability to support oneself and provide for oneself in a good way and have proper housing that, you know, somebody's not kicking down your door for drugs, which happens a lot in the SROs, or they're controlled by gangs in the SROs, we're going to have this problem. And nobody has the jam or the guts to say, hold it and do a proper assessment, but then act on the assessment and the recommendations. I mean, what's the sense of doing a study for a whole year, spending $500,000 on the Missing and Murdered Women's Inquiry, and then not following up with the recommendations?
You wrote a lullaby for missing and murdered women. Can you tell me a little bit about where this song came from, how it came to you?
Let me calm down for a minute. Well, most of my songs are songs that come through me. I don't sit down with the intention to write a song. However, I will say that the missing and murdered women have been on my mind for some time in a different way. Because of the families are recognized, but in my humble opinion, they are not provided with the necessary tools to put in their toolbox to address the loss of a child. And so what happens in some occasions, I'm not going to say this happens to all the families, but some have gone back to addiction or there's abuse in the family. And I think that the other part of the equation, and it was one of the recommendations made by the federal government after the research and the interviews and all that they did as part of the inquiry, is they have not provided, a tool that the families can use for their well-being, mental health. And so there are consequences from that.
You say in your write-up that the song acknowledges and offers comfort. What does that mean?
It means of thinking of any experience, actually any experience that you have had. It provides an opportunity to have a relationship with that experience in a different way. So by that, I mean, instead let me think about this for a minute. Instead of thinking of yourself as a victim and the person as a victim, they are physically, but we believe in Indigenous practice, and I am a ceremonial woman, that when you pass, you go to what we call the other side camp. You go to the spirit world. And so there you are well and taken care of. We on the physical plane think of it as loss, and it is loss, but the person who has passed is fine. We hold on to our stuff, and so it can cause depression. It can cause a recession into maybe you had abusive experiences when you were a child. Those things come back because you're holding on. And so the gift of that song is to remind people who have experienced loss is that the people that you're mourning, because you never lose the love, the people that you are mourning have moved on to the spirit world. And there it is, a garden, there it is, there's lots of analogies, but it, you're in the light, so you're not unwell.
That's really powerful.
The challenge of that is, and we humans have a difficult time with this, it's acceptance. You accept what has happened, and that acceptance gives you some freedom to move forward with your life without holding on. Because when you lose, our society influences us to mourn, to think we've done something wrong. So you go into a guilt complex. There's all those negative things. And so in indigenous traditional practice, we mourn the loss, but we know that what happens is to the person that has passed is they're all right, you know, and they're surrounded by love and they're full of light.
Because it's so difficult, and especially when it's unjust, when there's an injustice, it's the violence or the inexplainability of what has happened is just so devastating.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
Musically, it's been a very productive year for you. You've got this new song out. You also had your most recent album. Looking back, is there anything you've learned from this pandemic time as an artist, as a musician, and as an activist?
Okay, let's take it bit by bit. As an artist, because I have always thought, even before the pandemic started, that our world was running amok. People were running amok. And there was a great amount of selfishness and I'm right and you're wrong scenario with people and organizations, government. It's very divisive, this us and them climate. So my intention when it started, and the first thing was acceptance of the situation. But the biggest thing was that I am, you know, very focused on my relationship with myself. How do I walk in this world? How do I talk? How do I think, etc., etc.? Who am I and how do I be, so to speak? And it's given me the opportunity to reflect on things because I'm part of the Downtown Eastside Circle of Grandmothers, which shares teachings, traditional indigenous teachings and life practices to members of the community. However, what I think is the most important thing about this time is that we really look at ourselves and the relationship we have with ourselves, because it determines every exchange that we have. How do we feel about things? What is our attitudes? And are they positive? Do they serve us well? What do we have to get rid of that's judgmental, condescending, all those negative adjectives that can show up in our person in different situations and experiences. And if we're going to walk in a good way to influence the energy of Mother Earth and all living things, we need to be accountable to ourselves first. about how we're walking on this earth. You know, and so I think it's very important that people take the time to look at themselves and what are you judgmental about? What do you love? Can you invest more energy in that? Who do you criticize and why? So these are all things to make this a better world and allow people that maybe are having some problems to look at why they're having the problems. And, you know, in your work, is your work who you are? Does it reflect your values? Does it reflect the way you feel about the human condition? And if not, take a good look at it and find out why you think that way. And if you can, change it. If you need to talk to somebody else to guide you, do that. But do the work to be the best person and human being that you can be.
I mean, it must be difficult not to be able to perform in the last year. And I know that blues is such an oral tradition and such a communal activity, not just a record that you listen to.
Well, yeah, it is difficult. But, you know, at 75, I'm trying to pace myself and my health goes up and down. So I'm just grateful for what comes.
You're not touring with the Monkees anymore.
I'm not touring with the Monkees. But it's so funny that you should mention that. The Monkees were supposed to be in Vancouver. And the guy that was presenting it actually contacted me and asked me if I wanted to come to the show. Well, now it's been postponed two times, so I'm not quite. And quite frankly, I don't think, even though everybody's getting a vaccine, that things are going to open up to the degree that we can have a full-fledged concert anytime soon. So I'm not sure what's going to happen with that.
Do you remember when you first performed with them?
Oh, sure. The Winnipeg Arena. And I think I was 22.
Wow. What an amazing history.
I know. Who knew? I didn't even know who they were, to be honest, at the time. Listening to R&B, right? Not rock or rock music at that time anyway.
Yeah, without R&B and blues, there wouldn't be the rock music.
Well, that's true. You know, that's very true.
The last time you were on here was outside the Carnegie. We'd just done a whole two-episode special on the vaccination clinic, and it really felt like such a historic day for so many people down there.
It sure did. I think that, you know, the way that they did it was... It was quite humane in the sense that nobody had special privileges, et cetera, right? So everybody felt like they were on equal ground. So that was good in terms of those impoverished and those not.
It does seem like, you know, turning a corner a little bit, even though it's pretty dark still.
This is the first pandemic of our generation. And my thoughts about it are that, we're a reactive society. In other words, we address something when it happens instead of having a prepared methodology to guide us by. So, you know, in this particular instance, it was a time of recognizing what it was, how do we address it, and what tools do we need to address it before anything could happen. So in other words, there wasn't a plan in place to address an emergency situation like this. My hope is and prayer is that they have learned from this, certainly. And it's not something that, what do I want to say? It's not something that in this time, when people are so self-absorbed, that they are considerate of what's around them. So another way of saying that is the people that don't wear masks, the people that ignore the guidelines, are perpetuating the problem instead of being part of the solution.
Now, how do you feel? It's been about a month and a half since I think you got your vaccine, right? How is that going? How do you feel about that?
I would have liked to have my second vaccine in a timely manner, but I do understand the priority of getting everybody their first vaccine. So I'll wait, you know. I mean, I'm not going to have an attitude about it. There are many more things to have attitudes about at this time.
But no major side effects, eh?
You have any safer? Yeah, I'm good. I'm good.
Anything else you wanted to share with us before we go, Delana?
I thank you for the opportunity to share myself with all of you. And the other thing is, love yourself.
Thank you.
Take the time to enjoy yourself and your friends and music, of course.
Any musical projects coming up for you?
I think the record company and I are going to do a compilation of all my CDs, the best of. So celebrating my 75 years here.
Well, congratulations on a successful and really inspiring 75 years, and looking forward to this next project.
I'm appreciate your time and allowing me to speak, dear. Keep up the good work, all my relations.
You too. Thank you. And that was Delana Gail Bowen. Her latest album is Looking Back.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.